Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-painted fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Henny, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden, your host of the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Hi, and welcome to episode 278 of the Inexplicable Dumb Show. I'm John Malden, and this week I have Brad Oxnam joining me in Studio 1103 as we discuss Boiler Room Theater's production of Mice and Men, and my particular performance of Lenny in that production of Mice and Men. And we're going to get into that interview right after these brief messages. Would you like to be a pal of the Inexplicable Dumb Show? Why don't you head on over to www.inexplicabledumbshow.com and look for the Hosting Donations Accepted button. Press that and make a donation and help the Dumb Show cover its web hosting fees. Your donation is greatly appreciated. Thank you for your support.
Hi, I am someone you will probably never meet.
Yet I ask you to take time to think about people you don't know but need your help. Children, some of them. And they don't all play in the gutter, of course.
Well, maybe if it's called for.
These men, women, and yes, even the children are professional actors. They want and need your time, money, and support.
For just pennies a second, you can enjoy the fruits of their labor. Make sure they know you heard about them on the Inexplicable Dumb Show. They may look at you funny, but that doesn't matter. It's for the children.
It's for the children.
It's time once again for some deep fried theater!
Alright, so here we are at Studio 1103, after a long time covering the Humana Festival, which was wonderful. We get to get a kind of a live recording here in Studio 103. I'm joined by Brad Oxnam.
Hey, guys.
And we're going to flip the script a little bit. We're going to let him interview me about my critically acclaimed role as Lenny in Boiler Room Theaters of Mice and Men.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say that because we were very successful in our accolades by the local critics, but it's also kind of fun because it drives my wife a little crazy now that everything I do is critically acclaimed.
That's right.
I've got to enjoy it while I can.
Exactly. So. Milk it for all it's worth.
Well, milk it. Thanks for stopping by, Brad, and welcome. How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you? So I'm really proud of all the good reviews I've seen for you.
Well, so am I. It's really been a very rewarding experience, and what's kind of neat is the dialogue is directly lifted from Steinbeck's novella. So the lines we speak are, you know, it's not someone's take on of Mice and Men. It is of Mice and, I mean, it's literal word for word from the novella.
Oh, cool.
To the stage, because that's apparently what he wanted to create when he created it. And I may have the exact dates off, but I didn't know this, but the novella was published in 1936.
Mm-hmm.
It was on Broadway in 1937, made a film, I think, in 1938 and won awards. Like, it all kind of boom, 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 boom.
Wow.
And Broderick Crawford originated the role mm-hmm. on Broadway, but then Lon Chaney Jr. wanted to do it in the film. And so he politicked to get the role, and he did the role of Lenny in the film. And there have been several other versions and films.
Cool. I'm getting a good little education here.
Yeah.
So for those of you listening, I am truly a beginner of Mice and Men. I have not read the book. I have not seen the movie. In fact, after reading or being forced to read The Red Pony and The Pearl, I was kind of anti-Steinbeck for a while. But my friend being in the production, it sort of sparked my interest. I want to see this play, and now I want to read the book since I know the play is based on the book. This is great.
You're in luck. It's a relatively short novella.
Oh, cool.
It's only like 80 pages or something.
Oh, that'll be easy.
Yeah, I've downloaded it on my iPad. But anyway, yeah, so getting more on to our local production here at Boiler Room Theater, we opened April 13th, which was a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a good day to open on a...
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, open on Friday.
Friday, but Friday the 13th.
Oh, gosh, that's right.
When you're dealing with, some fight choreography and gunshots and stuff like that, that's always a good
day. Hey, you look unscathed.
Well, relatively unscathed.
Oh, good Oh, that looks painful.
Yeah, that I did that. I have a massive scar on my thumb. It's not from the fight choreography or the gunshot or anything like that. It's just my own stupidity.
Oh, dude, you could have, like, totally racked up cool points. Yeah, it was totally a knife fight that we threw into the show at the last minute.
Yes.
Then we got red light fever, and it just all went to hell.
It just all went crazy. But, yeah, so it's... the cast is really, really strong. It's 9 men and 1 woman. Mm-hmm. And let's see. Let me go down my list here. Ross Bolan is playing George. Mm-hmm. And I'm playing Lenny. And Phil Brady's playing Candy. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Dan McGeechee is playing Carlson. Dan Ziegler is playing the boss. Bryce Connor is playing Wit. Zach McCann is playing Curly. Joel Diggs is playing Crooks, and Erica Haynes is playing Curly's wife.
Nice. You got a real kind of local star-studded cast there.
So yeah,
some
yeah,
people that I recognize the names right off the bat. But
it's pretty cool, because, and kudos to the Boiler Room, because, you know, we've only had our private conversations about how theaters like to sometimes stick with the same people.
Well, sure.
And kudos to them, because Ross... Zach, Phil, Corey Caldwell plays Slim.
Oh.
Me and Ross and Phil and Zach, I think, are newbies to the entire theater. So this is our first show with them.
Yeah, the Boiler Room's actually doing very well with getting a lot of people in and, you know, new people a chance, and I love it. So, and you know, we all been there. We've all had that experience of I'm the new guy. So welcome to the forefront, man. After 3 shows, I'm glad you can be in this one. I'm sorry I'm not sharing the stage with you.
Yeah, well, it's actually a very good production in the sense for me anyway that it. Someone asked me about it, and I told it was a perfect storm of goodness, and I probably could come up with a better analogy than that. But I mean it. The synergy of everybody came in, and the great thing about the script is, yeah, it's George and Lenny's story, but every other character has a moment.
Oh, good.
To add to the story and to take stage, for lack of a better phrase.
Sure.
And the cast has met that challenge, and we worked really hard for each other, and it's a very strong ensemble feel to it. So
that is awesome. Well, apparently it's done wonders, because the critics have raved about the whole ensemble. I haven't read a review yet where they didn't have something good to say about each and every person. So that's, you know, a good chunk of it's been to you and Ross.
Right.
Of course, it's Lenny and...
George.
George. Lenny and George. But everybody's been given a good bit of good press.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very strong show, and I don't want to ruin too much for you since you don't know anything about it.
Well, I'm familiar with, I know of who the characters are of George and Lenny based on hearsay. And
I'm surprised you haven't read it. You got through it through high school without having to read it?
I grew up in Mississippi, I have to say that. And if it ain't William Faulkner, you know, well, it ain't worth reading if you're in Mississippi. Yeah. But I have read some As I Lay Dying, so I could drop a knowledge bomb on that one if you have that. But I have not read Steinbeck's great works. I've just read his minor ones. And quite frankly, the minor ones are not as good. I hate
well,
to
that's,
say that.
That's why they're minor. Yeah. I remember I read this in, I think it was high school, and it's powerful. It's, you know, a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I am familiar with the ending. I don't know how he gets to the ending, but I am familiar with the ending.
Well, you know, it ends with a bang.
Yes.
And, and when I first read it, back in high school, I just tears for Lenny, because I thought, you know, in the situation they could do something other than what they could do. Mm. And then when I stopped and thought about it, then I realized there wasn't an option, and then I cried again for George.
Oh,
so because he's put it, and it's just a very touching, tearful kind of weird decision the character has to go through.
Well, knowing what you did from having to read the book years ago, what did you ever think you'd get to play this character?
This is on the list of one of the characters that if you say what character would you list 10 characters, whatever that you want to try. This is on that list.
Nice. So you're getting to play one of your dream roles.
Yeah. I'm very excited. I've actually been fortunate. I've played a couple years ago Sir Toby Belch, and that was another one. So
awesome.
So I've been fortunate in that regard. But yeah, this is one that I've always had, you know, just a great sort of love for the story, because it and I have a hard time talking about the experience of doing the show, because it's not a fun show.
I mean,
there's just a whole lot that goes on emotionally, and it's emotionally taxing perform, you know, 2.5 hours. But working with the people has been amazing. It's been a really great experience, working with the cast and working with Travis.
There's nothing like having a great cast of people to work with. When I've been in 3 shows, since I've been in Nashville, one of which was, actually at the Boiler Room, Putnam County Spelling Bee last year, where everybody just clicked. Everybody got along. There were no diva moments. Everybody worked to progress the story in such a way, and everybody gave of themselves. It's a wonderful experience, so I'm very glad that you got this.
Yeah, this is
Mice and Men.
Yeah, it took a little while for the casting process. It took 3 or 4 weeks after callbacks to hear. But I guess he was going through and making sure of getting people that he, you know.
Oh, sure.
You know, so.
And this is Travis Brazil, the director.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Great guy. So I got to work with him on Pacific Overtures in February. So wonderful guy.
Yeah.
Never worked with him as a director. How is that?
He's great, but he's okay. He's not. What I like about him is he's always challenging you.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, if you're an actor who wants, and nobody in the cast was, but if you were an actor that. And that's probably why. But if you were an actor that just wanted to be told how good you were, he is not the one for you.
Nice.
Okay. Not that he was mean or evil or anything like that.
No.
But it was always just, okay, well, what about this?
Mm-hmm.
And then you would add that and you go, okay, what about this?
Well, cool.
Let's try this.
See, I love working with those directors.
This won't work, but let's try it anyway. You know? So, I mean, so going opposite of, you know, really fleshing out their own going opposite extremes of, you know, because he wanted at first, one of the things for Lenny is he wanted to have some sort of the physicality for Lenny.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up doing a lot physically with my hands and stuff. As that's really, and I still do a little bit of that, but it was much, much, much more. And he goes, okay, no. Why don't you... let's try to get it up in his face. So I worked on getting his twitch and stuff kind of up in his face. I'm left-sided for some reason on my my twitches, so I don't know what that means. But, you know, that was that sort of working the physicality around and doing that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's definitely not a script where you just kind of, I guess for George and Lenny, it's not a, those characters aren't just, well, we'll show up and start reading lines and...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there's definitely some work to be had. Well, was it, let me ask you this, was it difficult to play someone like Lenny? Because, I mean,
no,
it's vastly
actually,
different from you yourself.
Right. No, this is, I got slightly in trouble with the PR beforehand because there are a lot of elements of Lenny through that I've pulled that from people I've met or seen or, you know, through my past.
Sure.
You know, life.
Mm-hmm.
And it went through a long story on the interview, and then the PR kind of shortened everything, paraphrased everything, and then put a quote around it.
Yes.
Which wasn't exactly what I said, but it said something like, Malden has elements of Lenny and his family.
Oh.
So, of course, now all the family's going, okay.
So, which one of us is
Lenny? Yeah. And it wasn't that at all. I mean, I can tell you there was, various elements. I do have a cousin who was physically challenged.
Mm-hmm.
So there's elements of that in there. I had I pull a lot from my own son who is not damaged anyway yet, not going. but just for his innocence and childlikeness of Lenny.
Oh yeah.
And there was a guy and that worked with my mom. He didn't work with my mom. His mother worked with my mom in Illinois in an antique shop they had. But he was interesting because he was sort of Lenny in regards that he was, I guess when he was 11 or 12 or something, he fell down flight of stairs in his house.
Oh, goodness.
And he got brain damage of some sort.
Okay.
So basically he, and when I met him, he was in his 40s.
Mm-hmm.
But he was essentially physically he developed,
mm-hmm.
but because of the brain injury, he intellectually stayed on that 11 to 12 year old sure. range.
Yeah, of course.
So there's a lot of elements of him in there as well, because he, for some reason, you know, they talk a number of times about how strong Lenny is,
mm-hmm.
and I, you know, and you see cases where if something is lost, something compensates, it seems, in some of these cases,
yeah.
And this particular fellow that I'm basing a little bit of Lenny on, it was hugely just very strong.
Wow.
And wasn't a bodybuilder or anything, but just for some reason, he you know, that skill, I don't know if it's survival
it
or
must
something.
Be.
I don't know.
It has
but.
To be. So it's like when you, you know, you talk about people who have experienced blindness or any other kind of physical handicap, they all of a sudden, another sense will pop up. You know, the hearing goes great. I remember I had the fortunate chance to work with a legally blind actress years ago on Molly Sweeney, and I'll never forget this day. She actually knew when I got off book, and I was surprised because, you know, she's 80% blind. She could barely see anything, but she knew when I was off book. And I said, "How in the world did you know this?" And she said, "Your voice sounds different when you're off book."
Now, whoa,
dude,
yeah.
you are daredevil. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I bet that's true. Yeah.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
But I totally get where you're coming from with that. The analogy of, okay, one thing goes away and another thing, say the strength of Lenny comes out, you know, the intellectual and the mental capabilities may have diminished, but other things came up. So that's an interesting thing. I like that.
And it's an interesting thing about Steinbeck in that the characters are in a lonely world, not just George and Lenny, Curly's wife, and Crooks, all have moments where they talk about needing that connection with someone.
Sure.
To talk to, even if they don't respond, they need to listen to somebody, you know, mm-hmm. somebody needs to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And Lenny fits that role.
Mm-hmm.
Because in those scenes, that's exactly what he's doing.
Oh.
You know? So that's the tear-jerking part, is all these people complaining about being lonely, nobody talked to you, and Lenny's there essentially filling that role for them.
Oh.
But yet the society kind of, what happens is the thing that happens there towards the end, which kind of, through nobody's fault, it just, again, that thing that happened.
Sure.
Which was the original title, That Thing That Happened.
Oh, really? That Thing That Happened. Okay.
And it changes every dynamic right there. So that's, you know, you see it coming and you know it's coming and you can't look away anyway. And that's the crushing part of it.
Wow, man. This is just, I'm interested. So I am hopefully going, I hate to say I haven't seen the show yet. I've read the reviews, but I'm looking forward to seeing my friend on stage in this role now, especially after hearing the in-depth stuff on
this. Yeah. I knew it was a good show because my wife saw it opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she usually will say, "Oh, that's, you did good. That was good."
Mm-hmm.
All right. But she said it was the best that I've ever done, and that I was quoting her here. Brilliant.
Oh, wow.
But how I knew she really enjoyed it,
mm-hmm.
is because you've got to take the kind words of your friends and family kind of with,
with a grain of salt. Yeah.
Right. But the fact that I knew that it was really a powerful effect on her is that through the rest of the weekend, when we were out shopping or, you know, eating dinner or whatever, unsolicited,
mm-hmm.
oftentimes moments that weren't necessarily about me as the actor,
mm-hmm.
she would say, "I thought that moment when such and such happened, or when they brought that on, or when this happened, or when that character said that, I just, oh my God.
Wow."
So it's going to be.
Oh, that's a great feeling.
It's a good,
that's a great feeling for the show, not just yourself as
right,
an actor. That's
yeah,
a great
I think
feeling.
It's for everybody. Again, it speaks to, I can't say enough about the cast and the work they've put in. So if you bring a riot comes with you, tissues, bring tissues.
All right.
I'll just say that right now.
I may have to bring some for myself. So. From what it sounds like, I'm just going to be like bawling on the way out on the little, the shake your hand walk.
Yeah, we had to do that. Yeah.
I loved it so much. You were great.
I had to, yeah. There was a couple nights ago, there was a woman that just was walking up. I mean, couldn't formulate words, and I'm like, oh, just
Come here.
Yeah, exactly. Come here. I'll give you a hug. It'll be okay. It's just a show. I'm all right.
It was. I guess it was, when did we do it last? Tuesday night. We recorded on Thursday, but we did it on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little weird. It's interesting to see, because the first couple nights we did it, Act One apparently was had funny moments in it. And it was funny moments that we weren't like anticipating to be funny, and we're not playing for laughs at all, but it was just, I guess, the moment and the tension of the entire piece. People mm-hmm. need to laugh at something, but
yeah,
there was this little lady who just kind of beamed through Act One.
Aww.
And then as things get progressively harder for the characters and the stakes are, raised and mm-hmm. the world falling apart, mm-hmm. I don't know if the medicine kicked in or not, but everything was a little bit funny in Act Two.
Wow.
For her.
Oh my goodness.
But there was a good reaction at the end when everything, ends with a bang, and I heard somebody say, "Oh no."
God, wow, it sounds like you guys have had really great vocal audiences.
We have,
at least.
And I don't know if it speaks to the Ballroom Theater patrons, but again, personally, I've received more kind of feedback directly from like emails and Twitter comments and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
complimenting the show than say anywhere else that I've.
Nice.
So it's felt really good to say, "Oh wow, I got a fanny mail."
Yay, I got a fanny mail. Dude, congrats to you guys. I haven't gotten fanny mail yet from working out there. So lucky you guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, they actually got a very supportive group of people out there that come see their shows, and kudos to Jamie and Corbin for building that audience. It's great. So you've asked me this before when I've come in. What's your favorite moment in the show?
Oh, my favorite moment in the show.
How about, we split it up last time for me. Favorite moment of yours and favorite moment in general. So maybe not involving you.
Oh, okay. Favorite moment. Let's see. Well, there's, I think there's a section in, because it's written as a three act play and we break at act two, scene one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's act two in the script. It's act two, scene one. The moment where we begin to talk about the house and the place we're going to get, and we bring Candy into the situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's Ross and Phil and I, and we're sharing our dream. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the high moment. That's the peak for the happiness of the particular characters, because then it goes, downhill
pretty quickly.
Dramatic moment that I'm not even on stage for is when they talk about killing Candy's dog, because I just think that's a very strong
mm-hmm.
acted moment, and that's everybody, all the men pretty much except for Crooks and the boss and myself and Curly's wife. We're not on stage at that point.
Wow. Okay.
Look
for this when you see it on stage, guys.
Yeah, right. Man, let's see. Now, there's moments that, as an actor, I don't look forward to.
Oh.
Well, there's a pretty violent, very violent fight scene
mm-hmm.
that, I don't look forward to going through every night.
But. Okay. Oh. Well, obviously from your... Well, wait, you said that wasn't from the stage fight, your scar on
Oh, no, that was just me being stupid and hiding a prop somewhere and cutting it on a screw.
Oh, dang.
The fight, the choreography, it's in the moment, it works, and it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, one of those things, it's just...
Well, you can never tell. I've been in those situations, too, where, you're up on stage, you've got a weapon in your hand, and all of a sudden you just get the heat of the moment, and you really get into it, and all of a sudden, why is all this red on stage?
Yeah. Well, there is red on stage, but that's, thankfully so far, not been mine.
Oh, good.
That's just a moment that I don't look forward to as the actor,
Or as the character, probably.
Well, the character's totally unaware of what's happening.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah.
Because, again, it's one of those moments where there's tension with other characters, and he just happens to bumble in the way and directs the fire away from someone else, and then he pays kind of the price for just being him and not knowing when to shut up, you know.
Oh, poor guy.
So yeah, so he gets in there and gets beaten around a little bit, and then another favorite moment. It's just a tearjerker moment. It's the end of our act one.
Mm-hmm.
Just at the end after that fight is a nice. I think it's a very emotional moment for me.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's a beautiful moment. Otherwise, I'm wasting my snot bubbles.
Well, I'm sure you got the critically acclaimed attached to your name and the show. So.
Otherwise, I'm wasting my snot bubbles.
Oh God! Yeah, you go all Blair Witch on us. Yeah, snot bubbles.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. This coming Sunday, as we record, should be interesting. Apparently, they're doing a hearing impaired performance where the script is going to be.
Oh, being scanned? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So
I haven't seen them do that before. That's going to be an interesting thing.
Yeah, that's sort of the plan. I don't know how they're going to do it because they have a big screen there, but that would, you know.
That would block your set.
Yeah. So I don't know how they're going to, I guess they're going to shift it off to one side or whatnot. But,
okay. Well, that sounds interesting.
So Sunday, this coming Sunday at 2 p.m. ought to be an interesting performance. And then the following Friday, we have a special treat. Mm-hmm. That's our last Friday. We close on a Saturday, but I have a second George, coming in.
Okay,
so
who's playing the second George?
I'm gonna leave that as a surprise, as a teaser for you, for the audiences that want to come in.
Ooh, you're gonna get the original George from the movie, right? Yeah, the 70-year-old guy coming in on stage.
Yeah,
probably not so much.
No, not so much. But anyway, that'll be our George has a process scheduling conflict that was known prior to, so.
Okay.
This was just something that we had to deal with, so that'll be interesting. So if you've seen it before, you might want to come see it again, because we'll have a new George for one night only.
That's cool. Yeah, we went through a similar thing with another show I did there. We had a replacement, and it definitely changes the energy, but, you know, I'm pretty sure you'll weather the storm as strong a cast as you guys have and as strong a story as it is.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. This is a great, strong enough, you mentioned the strong story. The script and the story carry so much of the weight. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if you had inferior material, you have to act the material up to make it. This is, I just got to plug in and go, and it's
nice.
It's nice.
Oh, that's a great feeling, isn't it? So we've all had those stories where, you know, you like the story, but the script is so bad.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. No. But this. Yeah. I mean, it becomes very emotional, and no one has to sit there and, I mean, you just have to open yourself up to the moment, mm-hmm. and the emotions are there. You're not. At least for me, I'm not sitting over in a corner thinking about my, you know, dead uncle or anything. I'm not doing, like, I just, a lot of that stuff, just by being aware and playing too truthfully in the scene, just drives the emotion
through.
It's sort of
akin to playing like a Mamet or a Shakespeare, you know, the words do most of the work for you. It's just about rising to the occasion of the script.
Yeah, I would say that as far as being emotionally available.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, it's not necessarily acting on the line. There is a lot of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, but, I meant just like in... Sorry, I've been teaching a lot of Shakespeare lately in some of my classes that I do at a school. I talked about, you know, I'd been telling my students a lot that, you know, Shakespeare did most of the work for you. Yes, there is the acting on the line, but you don't have to really think about, you know... It's not that you have to think about deeply, but, you know, even if you just got up there one day, you weren't feeling it, and you just start speaking the words and put yourself in the situation, it's there. So it's really there. And from what you've been describing, that's sort of the same element I'm getting, that Steinbeck, you know, really poured some basically his soul into this work.
Yeah, apparently at some point was a Leonard, because he did this work himself.
Mm-hmm.
In one of his times doing other jobs besides being a writer, he was one of these ranch hands.
Oh.
And apparently there was a Lenny-like fellow in one of these ranches that he worked at, mm-hmm. where the friend of the Lenny-like figure, mm-hmm. got fired, and so the Lenny-like figure took a pitchfork and drove it through the stomach of the boss.
Oh.
On that particular ranch.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
Okay, so there is a lot of personal investment in this story. and apparently that's coming through.
Yeah.
That's definitely coming through this script.
I haven't stabbed anybody yet.
Oh, good. So please don't, because I like you and I want to keep you around for a while. And the show would definitely go on a, you know, what would it be, 10 to 40 year hiatus point.
Well, it may be justifiable, depending on the... But yeah, all the pitchforks are screwed to the wall, so I can't get a hold of them.
Well, and bless the audiences.
Yeah, so...
Well, cool. Well, give us the dates and the times of the show.
Okay.
Where can we get tickets?
Well, you can get tickets. Hold on a minute. Let me flip the script here on me, literally. Let me get the number. You can get tickets at the Boiler Room Theater by calling 615-794-7744. And you go to BoilerRoomTheater.com and hit tickets and go to etix.com. And there's a link there, and they have the dates there for you. All that information will also be on the show notes page for the Inexplicable Dumb Show,
sweet,
which you can find at www.inexplicabledumbshow.com.
Nice. Hey, look at you with all the fountain of information at your fingertips.
Fountain of knowledge, yeah. I think this goes live on Monday, April 30th. It's our last week. Mm-hmm. So it's Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I believe, is the show nights, all at 8 p.m.
Cool. Well, I look forward to seeing it, and I hope everybody else does too. So please go get your tickets now. It's going to be, from what I've been hearing and from what I've been reading, it's going to be a great show. You don't want to miss it.
Couldn't say it better myself.
I saved you the work.
Hey, actors. Want to set up a website that is not a Facebook account? Yeah. Use your name as your domain name. Check out DreamHost. It's easy to set up. And because you are a listener of the Inexplicable Dumb Show, you get a special treat. That's right. Go to www.dreamhost.com and enter this special code, IDS, all caps. You will receive 2 domain names with your web hosting package purchased from DreamHost. But only if you use the promo code IDS. And remember to use all caps on that. Just another way you get buzzed by the Inexplicable Dumb Show.
All right, so that's it. I'd like to thank Brad Oxnard for stopping by and playing host for this week of the Inexplicable Dumb Show. Again, tickets are available at BoilerRoomTheater.com, or you can get the show information for this particular episode at TheInexplicableDumbShow.com. You can follow The Inexplicable Dumb Show on Twitter, capital I, Inexplicable, capital D, capital S. You can give us a call, 615-866-1282. Next week, I'm going to talk with David J. Luer, who is the man sort of behind the hashtag 2AMT or 2AMTtheater.com, and we're going to talk a little bit about how that sort of organically started. So until next week, hey, I'll see ya. Bye.
Are you a music lover? Then let Magnatune dazzle you with how different we are from the rest of the music industry. Interesting independent artists in diverse genres. Perfect quality wave files in addition to MP3s and many other formats. Instant album downloads or traditional CDs by mail with free shipping. All this and half of every sale goes directly to the artist. So visit us now at Magnatune.com. That's MAGNATUNE. Magnitude. We are not evil.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No E's. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Pop Alternative Media.